Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Welcome to the John Williams Show. I'm obviously not John Williams, and she's definitely not John Williams. That is my lovely wife, Sherry Fontana, who, you got to turn your mic on there. There you go.
It's on.
All right.
And I'm definitely not John Williams.
No.
But we are filling in for him today.
We are, and it's good to be back. We were here yesterday on the stream, had some fun.
We had a lot of fun, good times.
We did. A lot of interesting topics that amazingly came back around today. It's like when you're at home listening to, like, you talk and you say you have an Alexa or a Google Home, right? And you're talking and or your phone's next to you. And next thing you know, you pop on your social media and magically what you're talking about shows up on your news feed.
Which is freaky.
So disturbing.
Yeah. Well, a follow-up to yesterday's story, we talked about Alexa being able to listen in while people are having sex in their home.
Yeah,
which
a little hanky-panky.
Scary. Well, something came out today that Microsoft is able to listen in on Skype calls.
Awesome.
So not only Alexa, Google, now Microsoft with Skyping. I mean, are we safe anywhere?
No, we're not. I really don't think so. It makes me want to pull our Skype, or not a Skype, because I really don't use Skype for a lot of different reasons. I don't trust any of it. I think that every big tech company is just collecting data.
Well, ours is unplugged, just so you know.
You did?
It's always unplugged now. And you even have the little stamp covering the camera on the iPad.
Yeah. So Fast Company wrote this article. So they state, now it turns out that Microsoft is probably listening to some of your Skype calls. If you're using a tool called Translator, Skype launched a clever feature in 2015 offering near real-time audio translations during phone calls. But a new report from Motherboard reveals that Microsoft sends Skype recordings to its contractors. And the contractors review the translations, which means that audio conversations, including people talking intimately to loved ones, you know what they mean there, right?
Absolutely. Well, and this happens a lot. Like, everyone is Skyping, especially if you have a long-distance relationship, if you're talking to family. I mean, we do with your parents all the time.
Yeah. So it's a big deal. I don't know where this is going to end, quite honestly. I know it irks you, right?
I think we need to shut down all
just unplug
technology,
completely
electronics,
unplugged, except for the WGN Radio app, so you can listen to us. Another thing that irked you today, there was a couple things that irked you today. What just happened in the bathroom?
So I walk into the bathroom, and I had to put the toilet seat down. Now, that happens at home. I get it. You know, I have a 7-year-old son who does not always make it into the toilet.
He never aims. Right?
And when we're home, you do leave it up. And
me?
And it does happen, and I pick my battles. It's not a huge deal. But in public, in a public bathroom, I honestly don't want to walk in and have to put the seat down, which I did. You know, I got toilet paper, and I touched.
So you're basically calling out somebody here at WGN
who left
the toilet seat down.
Only because I think that that's such, you have to put it up, so why not just put it down?
But now, on the flip side of that, I agree with you, right?
Do you really agree?
I also think it's a bit, one-sided, because I'm a guy, and if I want to leave my seat up because I pee standing up, I should have that right too, right?
Oh, it's not about having the right. You definitely have the right, and anyone has the right to do that. I'm just saying that in a public restroom, it's a little bit.
Was there pee on the seat?
Yeah, all over.
Oh, that's gross.
And so I have to, you know, put the seat down and Please. Wash my hands an extra time.
All right, whoever did that, please come to the office. All right, we're gonna
was
take
it
a,
you?
No, it was not me. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, it is National Breastfeeding Month, and we have a really interesting story that we found. Sherry's a total advocate for breastfeeding, and when I showed this to her, she turned red and started fuming and almost punched me.
Interesting things happen around the breastfeeding world.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back. Yeah, welcome back to the John Williams Show. It's Frank and Sherry Fontana filling in for John Williams. We before the break, we were talking about how smart devices are just scary. And you could say something and it pops up in your news feed on social media. And Patrick's calling in because he had a scary incident the same way. Hey, Patrick.
Oh, Frank. Hi, Sherry.
How you doing?
Hi. Good. When I was, me and my wife were trying to buy a house, we were talking about what area we wanted to buy a house in, and we went to our phone, and houses from that area were actually being sent to us without even looking off.
How does that make you feel, honestly?
A little jaded because, you know, you don't want that happening.
Is it a convenience for you, or is it an intrusion of your privacy?
It's like intrusion.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It's just nothing is sacred.
Because if I wanted to search those properties, I would personally do that. But to push them, and I know this is the world of marketing and advertising on social, and it's going to become the new norm, and we have to eventually accept this if we're going to stay in the social world online. I think we do have to come to some middle ground on it, but I just feel like that's just too much for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Patrick, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate your opinion.
Have a great day.
You too, bud. All right, so I thank you guys. And text in 312-981-7200. Got a bunch of people commenting already on our bathroom starter conversation here because Sherry walked into the bathroom and somebody had peed on the toilet seat, didn't clean it. Then we talked about toilet seats up, toilet seats down. I kind of said, you know, I feel like there should be a little bit of balance between the male and female, that sometimes it's okay to leave the seat. Like if you're out of town, I'm leaving the seat up all day, right? If you're in town, I'll be more considerate.
And well, and it's...
I always wipe the seat top.
Well, the fact of the matter is, life happening, like this is not a huge deal.
No.
But it's just something that, you know, you notice and
someone's pee.
Yeah, I don't. And it's okay if it's up, it's up. But if there's, you know, stuff on the seat, it's just, you know, the germs. It kind of grosses me out a little bit.
I get you. Anyway, let's move on to more pressing topics. It's National Breastfeeding Month. And you are advocate. You've breastfed both of our children for many years, not just a couple months, but many years.
Yes, many years.
So when I showed this to you, this article, that a mom's staged a nurse-in at a public pool after a woman was kicked out of for breastfeeding.
Yeah, so, I mean...
How does it make you feel?
It's definitely upsetting. I will say that for sure because of what the mother is actually doing and what she's providing. I feel like there's so many layers to this. People are uncomfortable with it for whatever the reason. I know in this particular story, it's that she was asked to cover up and she refused, saying that show me the policy where it, you know, states that I have to cover up while breastfeeding. So she was asked to leave. So of course moms come back and they do support each other, which is a wonderful thing, and they came back and, you know, just were nursing their babies.
Yes.
And it's I love to know really
What is so uncomfortable about it? I agree with you. But so there's two things you mentioned that we should probably just brush on. One is the pure act of breastfeeding in the who would consider appropriate etiquette for, you know, do you cover up? You know, typically you would think, yeah, if you're in a public place.
Right, breastfeeding in itself is a topic. But then do you cover up?
Do you cover up? And is this okay where she was at a pool, whipped her, you know, breast out and started feeding her child, which... organically is the most natural thing you could do.
And I think it's all about preference. You know, when I did breastfeed, I was always covered. And that was what I was comfortable with.
Mm.
But some people are not. You know, if it's 90 degrees out and you're at a pool and you have an infant who needs to eat, it's kind of hard to cover the baby with something else where it's, you know, very hot outside. So
true.
But I would love to hear from people truly to understand, you know, what is it? Like,
what is the public
issue with it? Is it seeing
a
private part? Is it something that, you know, why are people uncomfortable with it? I'm curious.
And in this day and age, should you even remotely be uncomfortable with it? You know, but just to clarify, the reason why this is such a big issue there, because Texas law states that a mother is entitled to breastfeed her baby in any location in which the mother is authorized to be. The woman, last name Dujereau, was clearly in the right, and Texas City issued a statement apologizing to her and promising to train the employees better.
Well, and she was asked to leave, and she was with her nephew and two sons, and she literally had to leave the pool and felt extremely defeated, as she stated.
Yeah. You know, but the flip side to this is it rallied a bunch of breastfeeding moms to go to this pool publicly and do the same thing. As a nurse-in, they called it.
Yes.
Would you be one of those people who nursed in?
I wouldn't partake in that. Yeah. I wouldn't be comfortable. But I can definitely say that there were many times while I was breastfeeding where
you got looks.
People do make you uncomfortable. Yeah. You know, if you're not strong and confident, and I mean, I got tons of looks. You know, people just don't they're not comfortable with it.
That's their insecurity.
Well, and that's exactly true. Like, it's their issue. It's their insecurity. And it has nothing to do with my child and myself.
Yeah. I'd love to hear from somebody who actually has an issue with this. If there's anybody out there willing to call in or text in why they think they would have an issue with a mother breastfeeding their child.
And really, myself as well. Like, I'd love to understand it more.
Yeah, 312-981-7200 is our number. I think to me, first off, like I said, breastfeeding in and of itself is the most natural and organic thing, you know, it's you could do for a child.
Well, the scientific evidence alone about what it does for the child, truly, like, this is all scientific based. It's the most amazing thing you can give your child.
Yeah.
So it's like to have that, be such an amazing thing, and then have, you know, on the extreme, like you're stared at or you're shamed or asked to leave. Something doesn't make sense there.
Well, even in our family, people thought you were crazy. Not because you were doing it, because the length of time you did it.
Yeah, sure.
And so even like, you know, aunts, uncles, or whatever, were like, enough, Sherry, put the baby down, get him off your boob.
Oh, without a doubt. And I did it for 3 years with Lola, and I did it for almost 2 with Luca. And honestly, like, the fact of the matter is, if I was at a family party and having, you know, aunts and uncles there, I did go into another room. So I'm right there along with the people who are uncomfortable, and that's why I would love to, like, what is it about actual breastfeeding that makes people uncomfortable? I think it's just exposing a private part.
But I think in Europe, they have less issue with nudity.
Well, they're on the beach with no clothes on every walk of life and
so
comfortable.
So it is kind of an American thing, I would say, that people have more of an issue with nudity, period. But yet we'll spend $50 billion a year on porn quietly in the confines of their own home, but they have issues with a mother feeding their child. Very interesting. Let's hear from Kathy, has an opinion on this. Hey, Kathy, thanks for calling the show.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. What's your opinion on the breastfeeding subject?
So it's a really interesting topic, and I will just start with saying I breastfed my children. It's beautiful. It's organic. It's the way that we're supposed to go. All support. Having said that, I too was caught when I had to nurse in public, and I too got the look. But my opinion falls where, even though it's an organic, beautiful activity, everyone has to use the restroom, and we find a way to make that organic activity a little bit more private. So to be out and covered, I feel, is a compromise. Not that it's a wrong thing to be nursing in public. It's just a little bit of a balance, and that's how I feel about it.
True. Yeah, I'd like to see a picture of this woman and learn a little bit about her personality, just because is it an exhibition thing then, maybe?
Because
I agree with you. I think generally most people would say, exposing the breast and, not caring, or if she's wearing a bikini and just plopping one breast out and in the middle of a, there's kids and all this stuff. Again, I think by the last name, this person was European, so maybe it's okay in Europe where
different
she's from,
different
culture.
I couldn't agree more with Kathy. If I had the choice to, go into a restroom or go into a private area, that was definitely my first choice. So I agree. If you have the choice, I think it's definitely the better choice to be private about.
Thanks for the call, Kathy. Let's take one more call before the break. Let's talk to Joan. Hey, Joan.
Hi, how are you guys?
Doing great.
Good,
how are you?
Just fine, thank you. I'm on the other side of that issue. I don't think breastfeeding in public uncovered is the way to go. I am a grandmother, have no little kids or anything, but if I was a mom and had my little kids in the pool and this woman whips her breasts out and she's, nursing the kid, now you have to go into all this instruction, maybe sooner than you want to, address these issues with your child. Plus, in our culture, the breast has always been seen as some type of a sexual object. That's why people are not going topless on beaches in here, and they're doing it in Europe. And it's just something that I don't want to have to teach children, young children, about that early. Every parent should have the right to decide when they want to enlighten their children. And that's my issue.
I love it, Joan. Thanks for your 2 cents. Appreciate it. Well said. So we got to take a quick break, and then we'll get a news update and carry on after that. Lots of interesting texts coming in on the breastfeeding topic. There's a couple different comments here, Sherry. I don't know which one resonates with you, but 77727 says, would you want to eat in a bathroom? Would you eat in a bathroom, can't see anything while nursing? I don't know. 262, I'm a man. I'd rather see a woman breastfeeding in public than see her swimming topless. Huh. Interesting perspective.
A lot of different perspectives.
Yeah. Let's see. The 224, because some people still think nudity is dirty and only has to do with sex. That's kind of my point. Is that's not your problem. If you were breastfeeding, and that's not your problem, it's somebody else sexualizes it.
That honestly is one of the best comments right there, because that truly is the case. If someone has an issue with it and it's not the woman breastfeeding, it's not her issue or the child. Truly.
I agree. And people can't get over this whole toilet seat issue. We have to keep going with that.
People are mad at us.
They're mad. Well, not mad. They just have different opinions, you know? Like, we got a news, but we're going to quickly read this. The 630, Frank and Sherry, I have one thing to say about the toilet seat issue. 3-1. There are two toilet functions for which a woman needs to sit down because she sits. There's one function for which a man must sit and one which for which he can stand. That makes the three situations, pun intended, requiring the seat to be down mostly, and for one which seat can be up. Therefore, seat down. I can't argue with that. I cannot. That's a great argument.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the John Williams Show. John is out. Sitting in is Sherry and Frank Fontana.
The Fontanas are back in action.
Having some fun, talking about some juicy topics, too. Lots of response on the breastfeeding. Are you done yet, Sherry, with it? Do you want to address some of these texts that are... I could see you boiling
They
do.
They keep coming in, and people have an opinion, and that's awesome.
That's why
we're talking about it. People still just have an issue with it, and it's fascinating to me.
Well, I think there's a lot of interesting perspectives here. You know, I really like this one where a gentleman says, I'm a male, and I think too many people are overly sensitive to seeing a woman nursing her child. It's an act of both life and love. As for explaining it to your children, it's never too young to learn. Might help eliminate some of the hangups they have. Right? That's part of it. And then a follow-up to it, which some people might not like this. Look, boobs are sexual objects. They happen to be twofold in purpose, though. You can't say, oh, too bad if people want to avoid looking at them in a sexual way while I'm breastfeeding. You have to, you have this understanding, grow up tone going on. When it's also organic and completely natural to become aroused by the breast, too. Has nothing to do with the fact that the baby is currently feeding on them. And most guys are quite able to look right past the baby, which is a guy,
frankly,
I'm sure it's true.
Quite frankly, what I find most fascinating is it's more women that have an issue with it than men.
Yeah.
It has been my experience. And I think if you have the option to cover up, great. If you don't have that option and your baby's crying and that's how the baby's eating, everyone around should be okay with it.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. Everyone has a different opinion about it, but I feel like a child is never too young to learn about breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And it's not awkward and it's not uncomfortable. It's one of the most amazing things you can do. And if you don't make it uncomfortable to your children, and it won't be.
Yeah. I agree. Let's just leave it at that. This topic is sure to stir things up, too. Something also near and dear to your heart, with school starting, right, in the next couple weeks.
Back to school. A lot of anticipation, a lot of adjustments that are going to happen. And
we have a 5- and 8-year-old.
Yes.
Going into Lola's starting
kindergarten. Luca will be going into second grade. And so as parents, you always, wonder how the year will go and hope that, they adjust and that everything goes well. But there will always be ups and downs. But this article really struck me. It basically talks about what's the answer to school lunch shaming. So this was an article posted by News
at Yahoo.
In Yahoo.com. And it basically talks about, people who don't have enough money to pay the card for lunch are getting shamed and basically told that if you don't pay your lunch debt, you'll be in foster care, which is extreme.
Totally extreme.
But then it also goes on to say, if you have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich versus, mac and cheese, that people are shaming each other for the type of lunch they're eating.
The kids are. And it kind of happened to us, right? I mean,
we don't
know the exact story, but at some point in our son's first grade year, he decided he didn't want to stay for lunch. And luckily, our school has the option that you could pick your kid up every day for lunch and take him home.
Yeah, and so we were able to pick him up, throughout the weeks if we chose to. But he did come home and a few times and say, people were... He didn't use the word making fun, but he said that, people had made comments to him about the fact that he had, chicken nuggets or, fresh mac and cheese and things like that.
And gourmet lunch.
And... I mean, really, is it? It's kind of a form of bullying, but you can't really control all of that happening. And so I didn't make a big deal about it, and we dealt with it, and it wasn't a huge deal.
Even in this article, it states the psychological effects of it. Lunch shaming can have lasting social and emotional impact on kids. Children are so aware of difference between kids, whether it's socioeconomical, popularity, or whatever, that when you engage in any practice expressly meant to set them apart, kids feel that keenly. The stigma is real, and it's really unfortunate tactic. But kids don't know necessarily they're doing it, you know, like if some kid likes bologna and cheese and the other kid has, you know, a meatball sub that his mom prepared fresh in the morning, and,
which is totally you,
you know, with a little glass of Chardonnay that comes with it, in his thermos. No, I'm kidding. But, I think that does exist. And it happened. Our child, you know, felt weird sitting next to certain people because they would comment on what he was eating.
And I think you can't avoid all of that, right?
No,
so it's not like we made it. It wasn't a huge deal. Some of this is just, you know, kids growing up and learning how to deal with different opinions. And you're laughing. You're reading a text, probably.
I totally just read a text that just made me laugh. 319 says, kids are gross. Most people should just stop having them. Problem solved. That's pretty funny, actually.
Okay.
I don't believe it, but that's an opinion.
Funny.
Yeah, it's amazing. But, you know, I wonder if people out there are dealing with this with their kids, you know, I got to imagine it happens everywhere. You know, this is an extreme example, and it happened in Eastern Pennsylvania school. And parents sent letters warning their children this school district actually sent letters home with their children that if their debts for their meals were not paid, that the Wyoming Valley West School District can send this to a dependency court for neglect of their children's right to food and may result in their child being removed from their home. So not only would they get kicked out of school, they get removed from their actual home.
So basically we have the extreme of parents not paying the debt for eating lunch all the way to you're getting made fun of for your bologna sandwich.
Yeah.
It's like...
But that's just
the tip of the
iceberg with bullying. I mean,
I mean, this is the lighter end of it.
Yeah.
And what do parents do? You know, like, Luca's our oldest. So, well, and that's...
We're just getting into this phase,
that's a good question.
Really.
You know, you try to gauge. I talk to other moms and dads who I respect as parents and ask their opinion sometimes because some things, like I said, are just part of kids growing up and they have to learn to deal with different personalities and different opinions.
Well, there's two schools in this. There's the, you know, this is life, tough it out and, you know, figure it out and work with them, but make them tough about it. And, you know, they'll be more prepared to deal with this in life because it exists not just in school, but exists in corporate environments. It exists on the playing field. It exists everywhere. And if you're not, you know, suited to deal with it from a young age, it's only going to get worse.
I think teaching children to deal with their emotions and learning how to do that is the best thing you can do for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. It's a tough thing. I struggle with it every day, you know. The fact of making them tough? No, it's just preparing them for life.
Let's hear what the folks have to say. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're getting lots of texts coming in already on both sides of this fence. You got the sensitive side and the sensitive psychological approach, like a Dr. Duffy would come in here and say, no, you need to nurture them. And then you got people saying, sticks and stones may break your bones. Make them tough. Let's hear what everyone's got to say after this break. Welcome back to the John Williams Show.
Sherry Fontana's here.
Frank Fontana filling in for John. Lots of juicy topics here, talking about everything from breastfeeding to bullying.
To gross food and children and what not to say, what to say, what's acceptable.
Yeah, we got tons of texts coming in and calls regarding the subject of lunch shaming. Let's take our first comment here, which I thought was really interesting take. I taught my kids not to comment negatively on food, whether it's food served to them or someone else's food. There's no "that's gross" allowed. Everyone's got their own food. I like that perspective, don't you?
I'll tell you why I like that. I don't think we could teach our children not to make comments and not to, you know, say things to hurt other children's feelings. Like, that's just part of life.
Yes.
I get it. But if you're commenting on someone's food as a child, that's like if our children are eating a cooked meal from an adult and they say something like, oh, I don't like that, or that's gross, they would be disciplined for that.
I agree.
So they should be taught at a young age that that's just not cool.
Courtesy,
like, it's courtesy, it's respect. So I really do think that's a great comment. It's just all around, just keep those comments to yourself.
So then it goes back to the bigger, broader idea that, does it come from the parents? Does it come from parenting or lack of parenting that some child doesn't have the proper etiquette or proper manners to not comment on a child's, a friend's, or, you know, because it's hard because when you're in the kid environment, kids do crazy things, and kids, even if they're the best kids at home, they become part of the cattle and do what the cattle
definitely.
Do
they,
sometimes.
They test boundaries, and if they're not with their parents, they're definitely going to do things they maybe wouldn't do in front of their parents. So, but I think it's all relative to learning, you know, what's socially accepted, what respect is. And I think testing those boundaries is fine, but then there should be an authoritative parent, you know, grandparent, friend, whoever helped, you know, to help guide that child to do what is
the
respectful
right,
and the right
the
thing.
The quote unquote right thing. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll be there, Cher. I mean, we're only a couple weeks away from school year starting. And as our son Luca gets older, I'm sure we're going to be facing a lot of these issues.
Can't wait.
You sound excited.
We'll take them as they come.
We're going to play a little something. Well, not play, but a little segment that I like to call Would You Ever? Would you ever, Cher? Would you ever, if put yourself in this scenario, you're a gang leader from Brazil, right?
Okay.
And
what am I doing?
You're in jail for drug trafficking.
Okay.
And you want to escape. Would you ever dress like your daughter in a wig, in a mask, in makeup, and try to swap out for...
And leave my daughter there?
Your daughter there.
No.
I think this is how it went down. I got to look at this, but this is a headline that caught my eye. A Brazilian drug trafficker attempted to escape from prison on Saturday by disguising himself as his daughter, then switching places with her. Authorities say 42-year-old Clavino da Silva tried to sneak out of prison in Rio de Janeiro wearing a silicone mask, a wig, a black bra, and a tight t-shirt with three pink donuts on it. He's serving a 73-year sentence for drug trafficking and apparently planned to leave his 19-year-old daughter in prison to do the time. Wow!
That's
would
insane.
You ever, would anybody out there listening do that?
I mean, I would never replace myself with a child. So no, I would never do that. But, you know, maybe people just do what they can to, maybe they, it, again, after we're going to switch back or something, if they got away with that. But, I mean, really, would you ever do that?
I wouldn't, but I would imagine if you're like just this hard, cold-hearted stone gangster who's got to run his drug empire in Brazil, I mean... I don't know. Was his legitimate daughter? Is it maybe a stepdaughter that he's thinking?
It doesn't say, but I mean, just on the surface, I don't think
would you
most
ever?
People would do that.
312-981-7200. Would you ever swap places with your daughter to get out of jail? Would you ever, number two, would you, Sherry Fontana, paint giant emojis on your home just because you love them?
Perhaps.
Disregarding any of your neighbor's wishes or wants or desires.
Yeah, if we loved something that was inspiring and fun and we...
Giant emojis, you would?
I personally wouldn't, but I don't think it's offensive. I think everyone is way too sensitive to what people are doing.
Yeah,
way too sensitive. So would I paint emojis on my house? Probably not, but...
Would you paint a red door? Yeah, you would.
Yeah, I would do that.
So a Southern California seaside community is in uproar after a home was given a new paint job featuring two huge emojis on a bright pink background. Manhattan Beach residents rallied against the makeover during a city council meeting Tuesday night, citing problems with spectators. So people, I guess, are coming around to see this. One speaker called it a paint job of graffiti. Another said it's an attack on the neighborhood. One has a goofy expression with his tongue hanging out. The other one has a mouth zippered shut.
I mean, that's also, it's a tough one because it's your home, you know, if you're renting it or owning it, you know, it's under your possession. So what's off limits? I think that has to be determined by the person who owns the home and if they're renting to somebody, but.
Well, here's the kicker. You're right. The new paint job appeared after neighbors reported the home was being used for short-term rentals and the new homeowners were fined $4,000.
I guess they won't be doing that again.
Would you ever? I don't know. I wouldn't. I am excited at 2 o'clock. Just shifting gears here a little bit. There's a new documentary that I'm obsessed with. It's called Fat, the documentary. Has anybody seen it? Have you seen it?
I have.
You've seen bits and pieces of it.
I didn't see the entire thing, but I saw enough to know that it's very interesting. And we go back and forth on this topic, which is...
Like, what is the right diet or lifestyle food habit for you?
And when we do know, you know, scientifically based, that Americans eat differently than most.
Well, right. The traditional American diet based on the pyramid, right, is what I guess nutritionists, you know, general nutritionists would urge people to follow.
Right. And I think that, you know, as we evolved, as the years have gone, it's definitely something that is changing. And I think we're learning more about the food industry and why things are promoted as a, you know, whether they're good for you or whether it's, you know, government based or if it's
marketing,
you know, marketing
tactics, companies and brands. Yeah. And so this documentary takes a really interesting look into the history of brand marketing and as well as how fat was completely became the enemy in the 90s and in the late 80s and the entire government movement behind it. And which has caused basically, in their opinion, several of the experts and doctors in the documentary, caused the obesity epidemic. Because
for a while, everything was fat free and, you know, stay away from fat, you know, massive exercise and everything's fat free.
And carbs are good and oats and whole grains and all these things. And they've come to realize, you know, and this sparked the documentary was sparked by a famous director whose son was born with epilepsy and was having seizures since birth. And this doctor, this director went on a mission to cure his son and spent, you know, godly amounts of money. And
basically every answer he was getting was, you know, surgery, medication, nothing was nutrition. Formed about or talked about nutrition or health in that respect.
So coming up at 2 o'clock, we have the director, producer, editor coming on the show to talk about the documentary Fat. It has climbed to the number one most downloaded documentary on iTunes. It is blowing up across the internet because there's some real powerful truths in it. And the general idea is that fat is good. Like eating a keto-based diet is more aligned with proper health than more people can ever imagine.
Good for your brain and good for your mind. And
So I don't want to give too many more details out. But when we talk to Peter Pardini, the director, he will give us the whole kit and caboodle about the doc and how it was behind the scenes. So I'm excited about that. We're going to take a quick break and when we come back, we'll do a little news and talk to Peter.
I'm pissed off. The reasons that the ketogenic diet hasn't become more popular has nothing to do with efficacy at all.
In the Dietary Guidelines for Americans, they recommend fewer calories, less fat, less saturated fat, less cholesterol.
The history of science is full of commonsensical facts that turned out to be dead wrong when we did the science.
The question remains, what food should we eat to achieve good health?
Less sugar, less salt, more fiber.
You're telling people from different parts of the United States what to do, how to do it, and everyone's just throwing their hands up going, I'm going to do the best I can.
And what you're hearing there is parts of the trailer from the new number one food documentary on iTunes, actually number one documentary period, called Fat, the documentary. Joining us on the phone right now is the director, editor, one of the producers, Peter Pardini. Hey, Peter, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. Say hi to Sherry.
Hey, Sherry, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you? We're really excited to dive into this topic.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I watched the documentary twice. I watched it before we spoke or started texting a couple days ago because I saw it come out. And, man, I was just blown away because it's topics that Sherry and I love. Like, we always debate what's the right eating program. Like, you know, we've tried vegan, we've tried raw, we've tried paleo, you name it.
And we definitely do our homework. So it's not like we'll see something, you know, come across our desk and you know, are easily influenced. So we really love scientific-based evidence like this. And so that's why we're really excited to have watched this and to hear about, you know, how this came about and just this whole journey.
Yes. Why don't you launch off in, with us, Peter, on like how did this whole thing come around, the making of the documentary?
Well, I was going on the Adam Carolla podcast to promote the Chicago documentary I did. And I ran into this guy named Vinny Tortorich, who I had actually been following a kind of a, I wouldn't say it's a diet, but just a way of eating that he espouses for, which is basically just cut sugars, cut grains, don't worry about anything else, and you will be markedly better in health. And I had been doing that for a while and had already lost maybe 10 to 15 pounds. And I had run into him because he was on the show, and we had connected, and I was going to go on his podcast to talk about the Chicago documentary. And we got to talking, and we thought, you know, there hasn't been a health documentary that's been really like a great film. There's been a lot of health documentaries, but usually they're not really filmmakers who make them, and they're very biased, and it's kind of one side of the story, and you're not really sure if people are selling you something or telling you the truth. And I said, why don't we just do something that's the history of health myths? So we could go from all the way in the past and just kind of build up to where we are today and see where did our dietary guidelines come from? Where did the food pyramid come from? And that intrigued both of us, and we did an Indiegogo and raised $250,000 and
wow.
Made the movie. Yeah, we made the movie, and now it's come out within a week. It's the number one all-time documentary bestseller on iTunes.
Congratulations, congrats, man. Like, that's huge.
Thank you.
Why do you think it's hitting a chord?
Well, we basically had no advertising budget so far because we wanted to release it and see how it did. And I think what's happening is everybody eats every day for the most part. And I think people see it and they're kind of blown away by, oh, wow, the food pyramid's from 1992. It hasn't been around forever. And I think what's happening is they're sending it around and word of mouth is really just making it skyrocket, because we started off fairly high because Vinny Tortorich, the kind of main narrator of the movie, has a pretty large following on Twitter and Instagram and all that, and he has a huge podcast, and they all bought the movie right away. But it got to the point where in my hometown of Fresno, California, someone had messaged me and said that their teacher from high school saw their name in the credits, and they were completely separate from me or them in terms of like hearing about the movie. And that's when I realized, wow, this is actually spreading pretty far and very fast.
Yeah, I saw it before. I don't even think I saw it on your Instagram. I saw it on iTunes searching around for, to put it in context, we watched What the Health, The Cowspiracy, the China Study, like every food doc you can imagine. And obviously it sways you to believe one or the other sometimes. And, you know, coming here, my wife and I were like, well, man, are you going to be like a keto now? Or like, you know, you're going to disregard what you saw in What the Health and how, you know, meat causes cancer and the casein protein in dairy, you know, is responsible for most cancers today.
Well, and I think that what really struck us was, like I talked about, this was really evidence-based. Like there was a lot of evidence and scientific research where I feel like some of the other ones, they definitely struck a chord, but it was more fear-based. And now that I'm thinking back to some of the others, it was more like, let's scare them into thinking that this is bad for you, as opposed to, no, here are the facts, and you really can't ignore that.
If you look, I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone in those movies, but when you look at a lot of those films, you'll see that there's almost always, when you do some research, there's an ulterior motive to what they're talking about. It's not always just about, oh, this is good for you, this is bad for you. You almost always see some sort of animal rights background in their history, which is great. I mean, I completely understand what the vegan perspective is in mm-hmm. terms of morality and not wanting to harm animals. I completely get that, but that's a separate conversation from health. You know, I've been doing this diet for 2.5 years now. And for me, it's just food. You know what I mean? It's not an ideology for me. I went to the doctor. My cholesterol was high. and they told me, you need to lose weight and you need to lower your cholesterol. So I went and did it, and I lowered my cholesterol by eating nothing but high cholesterol foods, high saturated fat foods, and I was wondering, why is that happening? And that's when I got involved with doing this documentary, and we interviewed all these people, and it was very important for me just as a filmmaker, because, you know, I'm trying to establish myself as a filmmaker, not as a health guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted the movie to be informational and to show, where did these ideas come from? Why do we think this is good for you? Why do we think this is bad for you? And where did we go wrong? And a lot of the time, and the movie's only 85 minutes, so we could have made a 7-hour film, but
yeah,
there's so many things that you could get into that would show, like, just special interests and why things get out there that aren't really true.
Yeah,
based on what people want you to know.
You did a great job of the balance. And when we come back from the break, I want to get into some of the details that really stuck out for me, like the beginning of Quaker and some of the ideologies that came out of churches that impacted nutrition in our world today. That stuff was fascinating to me. We're going to do that when we come back. We're talking to Peter Pardini, the director of the number one documentary on iTunes right now, Fat the Documentary. We'll be right back. There should be a little bit of balance between the male and female, that sometimes it's okay to leave the seat. Like, if you're out of town, I'm leaving the seat up all day.
Something came out today that Microsoft is able to listen in on Skype calls.
Documentary Fat. It has climbed to the number one most downloaded documentary on iTunes. That's a little recap of what we've been talking about up to this point. We're talking right now to Peter Pardini, who is the director and producer, editor of the hit documentary, the number one documentary, climbed so fast. It's called Fat the Documentary. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Thanks again.
So, Peter, we left off talking about some of the things to me that really stuck out in the documentaries. Number one, really well produced. I love... Is it Vinny? Is it? Who's the lead in it?
Yeah, Vinny Tortorich.
Vinny Tortorich is a personality, man. Like, he has a storied history in Hollywood. I love the Oprah clip of him going nuts on Oprah and revealing the bull crap that happens in reality television.
Well, and his demeanor and his genuineness, the way he comes across, is just, it's compelling to watch.
Yeah, and so...
That's great.
When you guys started getting into the early days of Quaker and Kellogg and churches and the influence of one particular woman on the entire nutritional system of America, briefly tell that story, because I think it's so poignant in a turning point to where nutrition went wrong in America.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you hear stories that are from before anybody today was alive, and they kind of just seem ancient, but it's really not that long ago. I mean, it was 150 years ago, about maybe 160, if I'm remembering correctly. But this woman named Ellen White, she was married to the leader of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and apparently she had some type of vision that had told her that she was not to eat anything with a face. And this kind of led one thing after another. When John Kellogg, the guy who founded Kellogg's, came there as a young boy and was writing for their, you know, weekly newspaper, their newspaper, and, you know, he went on to make Kellogg's the biggest, you know, one of the biggest cereal companies in the world. And, you know, this is actually one of the more well-known stories about diet myths in the world, because I think there was even a Drunk History episode about it. But this guy was so puritanical and so anti-sex in every way that every type of, you know, sexual pleasure was forbidden. And this was kind of seeped over into food, where he created cornflakes essentially as a way to make men and women docile and to get rid of their, I guess, their drive for sexual pleasure, which is crazy. It sounds insane. And I, at first when I was making this, I was like, that can't be true. Like, that has to be a slant. And we looked it up, and it's well written about in his own writings. So wow. Now cornflakes and it's transformed into something else. I mean, it's a cereal company, but tons of sugar in it, tons of carbs. And yeah, it's just crazy.
I mean, it's almost like, let's suppress any type of desire or taste, you know, flavorful flavors that people want, and let's just make everything bland and boring. And this way we could control what people are doing and not have them, you know, want for anything.
That's insane.
Yep. Let's not enjoy life at all.
Yeah. And so with the birth of what, you know, I guess you're kind of alluding to the vegan movement, you know, Sherry, we've gone for years eating vegan, and we've tried raw, we've tried paleo, we've tried everything you can imagine just to try, you know, like a different life, food lifestyle. Yeah. And then obviously being Italian, you're Italian, you know, like you get our culture is very much pasta, bread, you know, sweets. You know, like to break that was one thing. And then once we broke that, it was like, okay, what do we eat then? So watching those vegan documentaries, you get your life scared out of you. Like meat is full of cancer ridden materials. Meat is full of, you know, carcinogens. And did you find in this research and any of the experts you spoke to that why do vegans get away with saying that? Is it real? You know what I mean? Like who do you
know?
Believe?
It's, I'm not, you know, I will just preface it. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. I made this documentary, and I believe the doctors and experts that we had interviewed. But what I can glean from it is that there are certain things that you can point to that, like there's numbers where they say, well, it's like a 80% more chance of getting cancer. But that, if you look at the actual numbers, that still falls within the plus or minus 3% of the deviation of whether or not it's going to happen. So it's really not an 80% makes it seem like it's a way higher chance, but it's really only like a half of a percent more. And then a lot of these studies, you can't do food studies for the most part because people do not tell you the truth about what they eat. So if somebody is eating a lot of red meat, the truth is that a lot of people who eat a ton of red meat also are more likely to smoke, are also more likely to drink heavily, are also more likely to have a ton of carbs and sugar. And for whatever reason, over time, red meat has been blamed for it. But if you just use logic, and this is not scientific, but this is just my common sense, if you think about what essentially the ketogenic diet is, it's red meat, it's any type of meat, any fish, vegetables, fruit. I mean, I can't really reconcile that that's bad for you.
I agree with you. But now, with the caveat that a lot of keto doctors are promoting more of like a 60 to 70% fat portion of the meal. So it's really that I would say would be the differentiator is that versus a standard, you know, no sugar, no carb, you're also intaking way more healthy fats.
Yeah, the fat is the key to it, in my opinion. And just, I mean, at the beginning of the movie, the clips of the Stephenson. He went and lived with, he was basically stranded with Inuits in Canada and this explorer, and all they had to eat for months and months and months was whale blubber and water. And he thought, oh man, I'm going to get sick. I don't have any vegetables. I don't have anything else but basically meat and water. And he was completely fine. And he went and did a year-long study at the Bellevue Hospital in New York to test out, because no one believed him. So he did this year-long study where they fed him basically only meat and water for an entire year, and they found basically that no change in his health after a year. And in fact, the only time that he got sick was when they had less fat in his diet. Mm. And I think that the high fat content is what gives you your energy. It's what your body ends up using for energy. But if you have not enough of it, it's, I don't want to say it's bad for you, but fat has been unfairly demonized over time, and it's actually a great source of energy if you are not having carbs and sugar. Because what your body does first is burn carbs and sugar, and if you have fat as well with that, the carbs and sugar are turning into fat, so you're storing the fat you eat and the fat that you're making from carbs and sugar, and that's how you get fat. I mean, it's basic science.
Well, Peter, I'm curious, are you getting, you know, attacked by the vegan community or any of the other, you know, producers of the documentaries, you know, coming at you or having a strong opinion about this film?
Yeah, I mean, there's been, you know, we have a majority of great reviews. I mean, on Amazon right now, I've never seen this before, but we have a perfect 5-star rating on Amazon.
Wow.
That's out of like 100 and something reviews. And on iTunes, we have a 4.8 rating, but there are some people who have come out and are saying, you know, don't believe this, don't watch this movie, don't rent it, don't buy it, it's all lies. And that's going to happen with, I think, almost any documentary. I mean, it definitely happened with the Chicago documentary. I mean, there were people who came out and said, oh, my God, I can't believe that they said that about Peter Cetera, blah, blah, blah.
Which is crazy. I mean, that's such a great documentary, which we will talk about. Pete, hang on. We do have to take a break, do a little news. I want to continue this conversation, sure, especially about what kind of flack you're getting from the vegan community. And we have some callers, too, that want to talk to you and say hi, share their story. So, Grant, I know you're holding. Don't hang up on us. We just got to take care of a little business, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the John Williams Show. I'm Frank Fontana, sitting across from my beautiful wife, Sherry Fontana.
Here I am.
You are in full effect.
I'm ready to dive back into this.
You are?
Yeah.
It's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, I'm learning so much, and I love that it's scientific based, and I'm curious to see the backlash that he's gotten, if any.
Yeah. So we're talking to Peter Pardini, who's the director and producer editor for the number one film on iTunes right now, documentary Fat. Peter, welcome back.
Hi.
Hey. So, Peter, we were talking about backlash from the vegan or raw communities. You said you're getting some of it. Are you getting those fanatics coming at you saying that you're just, you know, blasphemy?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, so it's been about, I think, you know, 15 reviews overall out of the almost 1,000 we've got.
Yeah, sorry, a little cut out there. Are you there? We might have lost him, I think.
It's never anything that's stupid about it. It's always just, this is lies, don't believe it. So I don't really concern myself with it beyond just expecting it. You know what I mean? Like, because a vegan diet, like, I don't care what anybody eats. I really don't. And if someone wants to do it, that's great. But when it crosses over into, I have to go after these people and we have to tear this movie down because we don't agree with it, it's a strange instinct for me. I don't have that in me, so I don't really understand it.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Let's talk to people who've done this and have made amazing losses with it. Grant, thanks for holding on so long. Congratulations, by the way. How much weight have you lost on keto?
Well, when I say in a year, I actually hit my goal in 8 months. I lost 7 pounds in 8 months, but I've just been kind of riding it after that, you know?
Yeah, that's phenomenal. We'll say hi to Peter Pardini, the guy who created the director of documentary Fat.
All right, well, thank you. This is not a diet, it's a lifestyle, and I will never go back from it. You know, it's a hobby and it's fun. My wife does it too. She has the same results as mine. I know other people who have started it because I didn't, they get, you know, the same results. It's just, I feel it's natural. Our ancestors did not sit there and eat bread all day, every day.
True.
You know, their whole life. It's my energy is up, sex drive, my sleeping pattern, I don't snore anymore. You know, my health, I mean, okay, so I have a 13-year-old. We went to Laser Quest together. It's a physical activity. 4 hours straight, I'm running the entire time. I'm 33, and he's 13. He was tired after about an hour having to stop.
Good for you.
That's the keto. That's the energy that it gives you, you know.
How's your cholesterol and your liver numbers and all that stuff?
Perfect. Good.
Wow.
That's, well, you know, regardless of, you know, what you believe and what you choose to eat, you cannot argue with the fact that people are really losing a tremendous amount of weight on this type of program, which in overall is good for your body in general.
Your body burns through the fat stores that you have because of what you're eating. You're eliminating. I got into the scientific aspect of it. You know, like, you're eliminating glucose. So now your body needs something else to burn for energy other than sugars. So it's going to burn its fat reserves, you know?
Yep. That makes total sense. Grant, thanks for the call. We really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
All right, Peter, that makes you feel good, doesn't it, when you hear stuff like that?
It does, because I hear it every day, and I read it every day on Vinny's Twitter of people who are just losing a ton of weight and seeing the health benefits too. Because one of the things we touch on in the film is that just losing weight doesn't necessarily mean good health either. I mean,
true,
you can be gaunt and in really bad shape, but this diet seems to be providing both for people. I hear a lot of stories of people who are in their 60s who thought, you know, their life was over, and they're reversing their type 2 diabetes, they're losing weight, they're looking good, their skin's great, their numbers are down. It's really, it's unbelievable considering what we've thought for so long.
Well, and I think that we're neglecting to speak on the fact that when you cut out the sugar and the carbohydrates, you're also reducing a massive amount of cellular inflammation that occurs when you consume processed sugars and starches. So that effect, vis-a-vis of cutting it out, stops pain, stops illness, stops so many things, cancer from breeding. That other part of the documentary that stuck out to me was when you guys pulled the study that said that sugar was the actual cause for cancer, not anything else people were saying.
Well, let's clarify that. Yeah. Sugar's not the cause of cancer. Sugar, when you have cancer,
right,
sugar can exacerbate
it.
And inflammation that goes along with that.
Right. And Vinny Tortorich, he had beyond stages leukemia, hairy cell leukemia, about 12 years ago. And he was on death's door, and he was one of the lucky ones. He overcame it. He basically went into remission, and the doctors said, you know, you're a miracle case, but, you know, be expecting within the next 4 or 5 years, you know, you're going to be back here because this just doesn't go away. You still have it, but you're in remission. And he asked what he could do, and he had already been espousing a no-sugars type diet because he trained celebrities and would get people in shape for premieres, but the doctors told him that sugar is actually something that fuels cancer a lot of the time, and he has cut sugar for 11 years, and his cancer has never come back.
Wow.
And they don't know. They thought that, they don't know if that's exactly the reason, but it's certainly probably helping.
Wow. Let's talk to Jackie, one of our listeners, who has an incredible story. Hey, Jackie, thanks for calling the show.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I'm really excited to watch this documentary. I didn't even know it existed. But yes, I have lost 110 pounds in the past year. I tried everything my whole life long. I felt I probably ate half of everybody around me, but still couldn't lose weight. And this was my magic pill.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
Can you just turn your radio in the background down because we don't have a little echo?
Oh, I don't have a radio on. Huh. Sorry. Must be the connection. I don't have the radio on.
Okay. No worries. So 110 pounds in how long?
In a year. I made it in a year.
Unbelievable.
That is amazing.
Yeah, and I just want to touch on the high-fat part. So I know that it gets a bad rap with, oh, this is the cheeseburger and bacon diet, but I don't eat that. I mean, on a rare occasion, but I get my fats from healthy fats, avocados, oils, nuts. It's not bacon and cheeseburgers that I'm eating every day.
Well, and I have a question, Jackie. Along with what you're actually eating, is it also portions? Because I feel like no matter what diet you or lifestyle that you acquire to, it also, I would think, in my opinion, is about how much of it you're actually consuming.
Yeah, absolutely. So I use an app that counts my macros, macronutrients. Mm-hmm. So I plug all my numbers in. I know what I need to keep at what level. And yes, you have to. I track every single thing that I put in my mouth. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So portions, no matter what, still are an effect on any diet program or any lifestyle eating habit. Because I like to call this, right, Peter, a lifestyle eating habit, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and as far as the calories go, I mean, once you start eating this way, you end up eating within that realm anyways. I mean, it ends up being a point where, yes, you want to still count what you're eating, but you end up being fuller faster. It's really interesting. And then you end up counting your calories, and it's like, oh, I was under 2,000, but I'm full. So it's really, your body will naturally tell you when it's time to stop eating, and it does. It is almost a magic pill, as she says. You have this way of eating, and your body tells you exactly what you need to know and when to eat and when not to eat. It's pretty crazy.
It is. And thanks, Jackie. We appreciate the call.
Can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
I just wanted to tell you that it was good for inflammation as well, because I was suffering from osteoarthritis in my knees. And unrelated to any weight loss, I was only 2 weeks into this way of eating, and I had a 70% reduction in my knee pain.
Unreal.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I was very sedentary. I would work, I'd come home, I'd sit on the couch because I couldn't do anything from the pain in my knees. Went for injections, nothing helped it. 2 weeks in, 70% less.
Unreal.
Yep.
Thank
Have
you,
a good
Jackie.
Day, everybody.
You too.
Thank you.
I mean, you just can't argue with results, Peter, period. I don't care,
no.
Vegan, raw, whatever it is, you cannot argue with it.
No, I've talked to several people who started doing it just from me working on the movie and them seeing me losing weight. And I'm sorry, it works. it's worked for every single person I've seen actually do it, because a lot of the time the media will try to make it sound like, oh, well, cheeseburgers, and then you think of the bread. You think of a cheeseburger with bread on it. But what it is people, I think, a lot of the time aren't doing it correctly, and they're still having the sugar-free products.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's the only time I've seen it kind of slow down, but even then, it works. And I've seen it work on everybody who I've seen do it. And my brother lost 80 pounds doing it.
Crazy.
So it's like,
crazy.
It works.
Well, you did an amazing thing with this documentary. Great production. We appreciate you coming on the show and spreading the word for it. Where can people find the documentary?
They can find it on iTunes, Amazon, Vimeo, Microsoft, Cable On Demand, and it's pretty much everywhere. But right now it's the number one documentary of all time on iTunes, which is pretty incredible.
Congratulations, brother, man. Keep up the good work. I'm looking forward to seeing the next one. Check out his other documentary on the band Chicago. I neglected to say this because I wanted you to have the spotlight, but his dad is somebody special, too. His father is with his, right?
It's actually my uncle.
Your uncle, I'm sorry, your uncle, yeah.
Keyboard player, yeah.
Unreal. Keyboard player for the band Chicago, so a very talented family there. Peter, thanks for your time, buddy. We'll definitely talk again.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. It's either good
love, I'm the last. Welcome back to the final segment here on the John Williams Show. It's Frank and Sherry Fontana. That was a really interesting interview with Peter Pardini.
A lot of fun facts out there.
Yeah, and lots of people texting and calling. What was the name of the documentary? It's called FAT, F-A-T, a documentary. And you can go to iTunes and just put in FAT documentary and it'll pop right up.
Interesting diet trends out there, lifestyle.
Are you swayed at all? Do you feel like, and it's not the intention to sway you, but facts are facts. And
I think we've done so much research on this throughout the years. So I think for myself, I do believe that sugar is not a good thing to consume, especially with high levels of it. And I think it's all about how you feel. You know, I definitely do feel better consuming protein. I definitely will say that for myself.
And you did a pretty steady year of vegan.
I mean, I didn't consume any meat.
You couldn't even look at meat at one time.
Couldn't even look at it. And I didn't feel healthier. I will say that.
Yeah. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with eating vegan raw or any other lifestyle. It's not about downing another lifestyle.
You know, pay attention to how they feel. You know, their health, their blood tests, how they're feeling. Everyone is different. Every culture is different. So I think whatever works for you, but find that thing that works for you and stick with it.
I agree. And I think, you know, like, for instance, your sister is diabetic and she was eating vegan for a year and gained weight and she was using so much insulin.
Everything was completely out of whack.
She went to a keto-style program with a lower calorie and it
her insulin levels are honestly lower than the average person is consuming on a regular basis.
It's
so
crazy.
For her, I mean, the proof is really
in the pudding.
In the pudding.
Huh. All right, we're going to close the show out here with a little something I like to call good luck, bad luck.
And would you consider yourself
a lucky person? I do sometimes, yeah. I think there's a whole thing to luck. I think it's when opportunity meets preparedness. And
did you ever just know someone who was just lucky, like all the time, like turn the corner and you know, something great happened or they won a contest, like, but it was continual? Because I knew someone back in high school, they just were extremely lucky. Like, where does that come from?
Well, I mean, some would say it's like the energy you put out, the vibration, and you're like, you're attracting that stuff. But would you, let's talk about good luck first. All right. So I don't know if you totally classify this as good luck, but go ahead, take it away.
Okay. So this is fascinating. Diver attacked by shark, rescued by fishing boat full of nurses in Florida. So there was a fisherman, he was a spear fisherman, who was attacked by a shark over the weekend in Florida, and he was saved by a group of medical professionals who just happened to be in the boat nearby.
Good luck, right?
Is that the universe? Is that God? Is that good luck? I mean, that's pretty lucky.
We can sum it up as, yeah, it's good luck. Now, I mean, so if the nurses weren't driving by in a boat where he happened to be being eaten by sharks and saved and pulled aboard a boat full of nurses, that's pretty darn lucky.
Right, I mean, they knew right away what to do.
It was unlucky that he got halfway eaten by sharks.
Well, true.
But lucky that he got saved by a boat of nurses. What's the chances of that?
What are the chances?
And they literally saved it. Like, the article goes on to say how these nurses bandaged him up and got them all, like, you know, in a good position. But man, that's lucky. Now, on the flip side, how about this for some bad luck? A man trying to elude the police in Missouri. This is from the Huffington Post, by the way. We're not just making this stuff up. A man trying to elude police in Missouri ended up being betrayed by his own backside. So earlier in the day, this criminal's doing something. He has a little Mexican food, maybe a little extra cheese or something. He's eluding the police. And he's hiding behind a bush. And the man lets out a huge fart at the wrong time, allowing the officers to sniff out where he was hiding. I'm not making this
come
up.
Come on. No, like, it's right here. But that's awesome.
So, I mean, that's bad luck, right? You'd say that's bad luck. Like, he couldn't hold his gas. He let one go. He gave up his hiding spot because they smelled his flatulence.
I mean, those are definitely examples of bad luck, good luck.
Or for sure.
Just, you know, their time to get caught or to be saved. I don't know. Call it what you want, but definitely bad luck, good luck.
Well, I mean, some people are saying the first story, the good luck story, which I consider good luck because, yeah, it sucked that he got attacked by sharks, but just think if he wasn't lucky enough that a boat full of nurses were driving by, he would have been dead. Like, dead. That's it. Shark bait. Done.
Or it's balanced out because, right, I mean, this person is true. Like, he did get attacked by a shark. So, yeah. But, you know, right, thank God that the nurses were there.
Speaking of lucky, we were up in Michigan City, and we went to, what is it, the casino in New Buffalo, the Horseshoe Casino.
The Four Winds.
The Four Winds. And there was a big raffle giveaway. Not that we're big gamblers, but we were there with some people that were, you know, had some stake in it. And it turns out this
woman,
can you please tell the story?
So they were giving,
this is lucky.
They were giving away a Porsche that night, a $75,000 Porsche. So a lot of people were there, in the raffle and wanting to win. Long story short, you know, the name gets called. This woman starts screaming. She goes to the front and she wins the Porsche. We find out later that prior to winning the Porsche, she hit an $8,000 jackpot. After winning the Porsche, she won two other additional jackpots, another one for $8,000, another one for $11,000. That's lucky.
That's cheating.
Right, bro.
That's
like,
cheating.
Something's up with that.
There's no way.
Isn't that
There's no way.
How?
She knew somebody from the inside.
Has to be.
There's absolutely no way.
Well, and one would say, well, what if she's a gambler and, you know, lost that money? Well, I mean, who cares? She won all that in one night.
Wait, so how much did she win total plus the Porsche?
No, 11, 8, 8, and 75,000. And that's well over a little over 100.
I mean,
so after taxes, like 70,000, 80,000.
Yeah, I mean, still. For a night out and you got a Porsche.
And a Porsche?
And it's just like 70
I still say she's cheating.
I got to agree with you.
I can't see that much luck. That's a different type of luck.
And you might be right, Ro, because she wasn't freaking out that she won the Porsche, right? She wasn't like,
her
oh
husband
my God.
Was. Her husband was screaming and asking everyone around him if they wanted to purchase a Porsche.
That's
so he was
right.
Looking to sell it right away. But no, I mean casinos, yeah, there's two sides of that. People think, "Oh, you know which machines hit and what doesn't." But we know someone in the casino business, and his story is you don't
There's
know.
No rhyme
There's
or reason
no rhyme or reason
to most of the stuff in the casino. I mean, you're pretty much going there to deposit money. It's rare that you could walk out of there on the upside.
Well, I'm cheap when it comes to gambling. I love doing it, but I don't want to lose. No one does. So if I put a little bit of money in and could win, I usually tend to walk away.
But I will say this. When you're feeling lucky, and you're sitting at a slot machine and it's working for you and things are going, you know, the right way and your money's coming out, you feel like, all right, my energy towards this is affecting the result of every time I hit the button. Now, as opposed to the next day where we're at a different casino checking it out, I couldn't feel the machines. Like, I wasn't feeling it. I didn't feel lucky. I didn't feel in the groove and I wasn't winning.
And so you're able to walk away, which is great. Some people are not. Which is, you know, not a good thing for them if you become addicted to something like that. But you have the ability to walk away if you're not feeling it.
Yeah.
Which is it all based on intuition? No, I don't know. It's I don't know. Crap luck.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll wrap things up and maybe say hi to Ro and Anna or not. Just throw the news. We'll be right back.